Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to episode number 42 of the Free Cities Podcast. This week's show comes from Montelibro, which is a fascinating project that resides most firmly within the intentional community band of the Free Cities spectrum. For the most part comprised of Russian libertarians, Montelibro has a tight-knit community with both land and buildings in Montenegro, as well as its own currency and decentralized governance system. If you want to take a deeper dive into the project, you can check out our Free Communities directory at free-communities.org or pop on over to episode 29 of this podcast for a three-hour 101 conversation with one of Montelibro's longer-standing members. Anyway, back to today, and I am speaking to a digitally nomadic couple who have taken the plunge and actually bought one of the newly constructed apartments in the so-called MTL City, which is Montelibro's initial block of building land. Kosta Korenkov and Albina Tukarchuk have been digital nomads for over 10 years, and this conversation is not only an interesting look into their motivations and the motivations in general of people who choose to set up in an intentional community such as Montelibro, but it's also a fascinating peek into the lives of two traveling software developers. We discuss the process of buying property in Montelibro, as well as setting up in a foreign country with visas, bank accounts, and internet, along with Kosta and Albina's tips for setting yourself up as a digital nomad. What are the best jobs to get, and where are the best countries to base yourself? All in all, this was an excellent conversation, full of useful information and inspiration that might help you to vote with your feet and find that jurisdiction that will treat you the best. Don't forget, you can discuss Montelibro in real life at our conference, Liberty in Our Lifetime, this October in Prague. Alf Spanbeton will be speaking about the project, along with representatives from many more Free Cities projects throughout the world. But before all that happens, you have plenty of time to enjoy this discussion, so just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Kosta Korenkov and Albina Tukarchuk. Okay. Well, why don't you start then by just like telling me your story? I mean, try if you can to how do you end up in a place like this? Like, how do you end up in Montenegro for starters, and then did you just come here because of Montelibro, or it was Montenegro on your on your kind of radar already?
Well, we should start with us moving here last year. And first we actually came because a friend of us invited us to stay over. And he got relocated with his job here in Montenegro. We both been here before, different times separately. I mean, it's a lovely place. What's not to like here?
That's what I mean. So what I've realized being here is that a lot of Russians came here anyway.
Yeah.
Used to come here. You know, you came here to visit a friend, did you say?
Yeah. Just maybe for a month or so. But we liked it here. The nature is gorgeous. Everything is great. And it's very easy to stay, you know. And for Russians as well, which became very complicated recently. And here you could just basically stay. Just don't do anything. Yeah, we left and then we came back in August because we liked it so much. We just figured out some documents and stuff. Yeah, and I think since August, yeah, we're residing here.
And here that's the place where our stories are a little bit different, because before we came here, I was aware of Monte Libero. That wasn't the reason I came here with Albina, but I knew the thing exists because I was kind of interested in libertarian ideas for some years. And I was reading Anne Kaptan. I think you met her yesterday.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so I was reading her Telegram channel. I was reading some books on like libertarianism in general and in around this area. And when Monte Libero started, Anne Kaptan wrote about it, and I was aware this something is going on here in Montenegro, and I even followed a little. Like I knew that they started building the road. Because lots of jokes about that, how would the road will be built.
I've laughed about that six times already since I've been here.
The guys are really proud of that. And I saw the first photos of the plot, of the land. It was really wild, like bushes, nothing. And the work they done is impressive. I think it was done last year, so... It was one of the reasons the Montenegro was interesting to me personally, because I was curious to see what's going on here.
But back in Russia, were you interested in libertarian principles
already? Yeah, of course.
And where were you living in Russia, if you don't mind me asking? Or what situation were you living in?
The last years, the place where we last stayed in Russia was Crimea, actually. So we were traveling when the war started. We were in Mexico, and all our possessions, most of the stuff, were left in Crimea. And I had a short trip back to Crimea last summer to, like, packed everything in my car and drove back to my family place in Moscow, and then just left for Montenegro.
Had the war already started then?
Yeah.
So you should have been in the army, isn't that right? Like, what? I heard they're sort of making everyone fight now. Is that true?
Not everyone. So they have numbers, the conscripts they need at the times. And obviously there are much, much more men in Russia than they need for in army. And that's kind of creates the tension. You never know. I mean, probably they would need, I don't know, 10,000 people. That's not much, but if you are one of these 10,000, that doesn't help you.
So it's like a lottery or something.
Yeah. So I think that's the most, like, not terrifying, but that's what most people are afraid of. You don't know, actually.
But last summer, when we came back to Russia for our stuff, there were no call-off for army yet. So it was just immobilization didn't start it yet. So it was somewhere distant. Just in Crimea, it's really, I mean, the whole territory is blocked, so you can't really freely go in and out by airplane. You can use trains, and then it's super dangerous around. I didn't go there even.
What were you doing? How come you were living in Crimea then?
Because it's beautiful there. It's stunning. It's an amazing place.
I have very little knowledge of I've been to Russia once, and it was just to speak in Moscow. But I have no... Oh no, sorry, that's wrong. I've been to Siberia, but the rest of Russia, I have very limited knowledge of. So, describe Crimea a little bit more, where it is, what it's like, and what it's like now, what the situation it's in now, maybe.
In general, I think it's a lot like Montenegro, climate-wise, nature-wise. It's very beautiful, lots of mountains too. Maybe a little bit colder. Because of the Black Sea, yeah. I can't say what it is now.
It's a special region in Russia, because of this. It's sanctioned. It was always sanctioned. Since it became part of Russia, or by like Russian opinion. So it was all the big players on the market, Russian market, they were always reluctant to go in there. So, and Russia is like any big country, like modern country, has big, I don't know, shops, all the like brands, you know, they present in Russia, but not in Crimea. It's not like that. There, you won't see a shops like, I don't know, Zara, H&M and stuff. And the big banks, even Russian official banks like Sberbank, they don't have the branches in there. They kind of shun away. And it's kind of inconvenient because it's more like less modern in this sense, but it's in a way romantic because they have their own things in there, and it's outdated, to speak mildly. And that's and Montenegro kind of reminds me of that as well. It's Montenegro is like Russia around 20 years ago in terms of, you know, modern conveniences. I'm not big fan of, you know, everything modern, so I like it here, and so I was comfortable in Crimea in this sense.
But presumably the reason you moved in the end to here was because of what's going on.
Because of the war, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That was your final. Was it something that you were thinking of anyway, or were you quite happy to stay in Crimea?
it's lovely there.
Both of us been traveling for quite a while already, so kind of digital nomads, how they say it nowadays. So we are perfectly comfortable living extended spans of time abroad. And separately, we had our own histories. We are together for 2 years now only. And before that, we were like going our own ways, and we stayed for years, sometimes months in like Asia, locations like that. Albina lived in Europe for many months. It's less stressful for us. It's less of the relocation for us. It's just another extended trip, so to say. I could see it like that as well.
Can I ask what you do as digital nomads?
Yeah, with software developers.
You're both software developers?
Yes.
Anything in particular? Any types of things? Or which languages, etc.? You know?
For me, it's front-end development. So I do websites, mobile applications, mostly interfaces. And I think Costa is more of a full stack developer.
Yeah, I do everything except machine learning and like very low end coding, like close to hardware. I can do full stack and DevOps as well. And I mostly use TypeScript if you're interested, but I used many other languages like Rails, Python. I had a small career being a Java developer in a corporation in Russia.
The reason I ask is because we actually speak to a lot of digital nomads on this podcast, because it's the free cities thing and digital nomadism are very closely aligned, because digital nomads are almost like the first movers in a lot of these places. You kind of have to be often. And myself, I'm like 52 now, but I traveled I've traveled most of my life, but I traveled properly like a nomad for probably about 3.5 years, if you add it all up. But I was an analog nomad. And one of the problems we always had was making money on the road. So looking at the opportunities that everyone has now, I'm just super jealous to think that, you know, you could have a profession like software developing and go anywhere you want, quite literally. And it's such a great and phenomenal opportunity. So it looks like you've chosen Montenegro for the next amount of time, let's say. Is that right? I mean, you've bought property at the MTL site, haven't you?
Yeah.
Currently being developed. But not as in a piece of land that you're going to build on, but an apartment in the building that's being built currently, which I've been up there to see. It looks quite nice.
Yeah. So this is the first building, which is already, I think it's done by now. That's where our apartment.
So tell me why you did that instead of just buying an apartment in Bar or something. You know, like, what's the, you know,
firstly, we wanted some place to drop our stuff while we're traveling, you know, like a storage unit.
Yeah, for sure.
In general, we wanted some place to come back. It's you know how tiring it could be when you travel a lot.
Yeah.
And Monte Libero seems like a great, great place to be, great people to have around. And I think it's a combination of those two factors. Like, first you have your own place to come back, and then you have people to spend time with, which is also very important while you travel. You just, lots of people there, randos, right? You pretend to be friends for a couple of weeks, but it's not the same.
So the ideological side of it is a strong component.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, personally, I would love to contribute more, help more, Monte Libero more than I do now. And still looking for ways I can do that. So that was a factor. Also, we're not still sure, maybe not now we're more sure, but before we were not sure where we want to go, where we want to, you know, stay in this country for like years. And because of that, we didn't want to invest a lot of money. And the price of that apartment was below the market. So that was also a factor.
Can I ask how much it was? You don't have to tell me, but
I mean, it's all public.
Is it? Okay. Well, how much was it then?
So the original calculations was
27k
euros for 33 square meters.
Yeah, so 33
square meters. That's 1,000 square feet. Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but the...
And do you get to plan it yourself, the rooms and, you know, and stuff?
It's just 33 square meters.
Yeah, but you've got to put a few walls in there, haven't you?
No, actually, we just...
Are you just going to leave it open?
Yeah, our neighbor, he has the like a similar apartment, but like mirrored. So he decided to make a bedroom. So he put a wall for that. But we didn't like that because it's too little space, so we decided to cram everything in one space, but make it for us, so for our needs. So we spent a lot of time working, so we need a working place. We don't spend much time in bedrooms except sleeping, so it could be smaller. We don't need it like be separate room, so we incorporated things like that and come up with the project.
How about the internet up there? Presumably, you need super fast internet.
Well, we're not, you know, uploading videos on YouTube, so not that fast. If it's convenient to have mobile internet, and I also hoped that it would be solved by that time when we move in.
Yeah. I mean, or at least start. They use Starlink here at the clubhouse, don't they? Yeah. That's always available, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not official. Let's call it this way, because officially Starlink, it's not in Montenegro yet. They're coming.
Yeah.
When, how does that work? I thought you just point a satellite at the sky and get Starlink.
And then, you know, the borders and political people
but
coming
how do they,
in.
How do they know?
It's. I think it's about retranslation. So you need to put, to have a better signal, you need to put a translator here. And the closest one, I think, in Sofia, in Bulgaria. So it is supported here, but for some reasons not in Starlink as a business, not only as a software.
No. But they are using it in this building already, so it must be possible.
Yeah. There are two types of packages you can buy with Starlink. One is domestic, and this one you cannot use here because you have to use it in Bulgaria because the package is the set is registered in Bulgaria, but they have a roam, like a kind of roaming you have with your mobile plan. They have a roam, I think, and it allows you to use your set, Starlink set, abroad, but there are limitations, I think. Every 2 months you have to come back to your home, like the country where this thing is registered. I don't know. Don't ask me. We still hope that it's not gonna work. I mean, it's not true, and we can just use it like that.
And is there gonna be a maintenance fee to pay on that building? You know, like normally when you have a building, often if you have an apartment in a building block, there's a fee to pay every year for, I don't know, the upkeep of the outside and stuff.
And to start with, we already paid a bit more because of the road. So original price of 27k raised up to 33 for the apartment.
Not only because of the road, but the price of materials during the construction,
yeah,
it went up, and yeah, the original calculations were off. And yeah, so once we the construction company, they recalculated, it was 6K more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when do you think you're going to be, you know, turning the key and jumping on the floor?
I think we already can, because
yeah,
we decided to do the... how's it called?
To maintenance, to work on it a bit later, but
yeah,
technically we could start already.
So it's now it's all dirty, you know, after the construction. It's not ready to like to put the bed inside, unless
But it's got a bathroom and
no bathroom,
right.
just the connections, plumbing. You have to like install everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's up to you to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's bare, like we call it in between each other. We call it concrete. Our concrete.
Nice.
Like let's go to our concrete box, because it's basically like that. So there's nothing in there, just windows, the door, and yeah.
Is it your first concrete box together?
Yeah.
Out of interest.
Yes,
yes. You never had a house together. Well, congratulations
yeah,
for that first.
Ooh,
that's
yeah,
a nice nice start.
You see those happy faces, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's super important to get stuff like that. And I mean, certainly if you lived in the UK, you wouldn't be living in a house on your own that you owned, because the cheapest ones you can get are like hundreds and hundreds of thousands
yeah,
of pounds. It's like, yeah, it's crazy. Can I talk to you a little bit about digital nomadism? Because I'm fascinated by it, like I say. I think it's a really contemporary phenomenon that's just so exciting. Like, how long have you been doing it, first of all?
I started when I was maybe 20 years old. Yeah, like over 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, that was early start. We didn't have this word back in the days, you know. Back then I was just, weirdo with remote job. Basically that, yeah. And it was cheaper to go to places like Thailand or Vietnam than to stay in Russia.
Yeah.
And I mean, what's the point to stay there in winter if you could just take a flight to some of these amazing islands?
Yeah, India as well. Goa. It's been over a year and a half in India, and there were a lot of Russians in Goa,
oh,
escaping
right,
the cold weather.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's what we do for sure. In Thailand, it's lovely, but when you stay in one place and, in tropical countries, I had this weird feeling that you lose sense of time. Like all the surroundings are the same, basically the same weather all the time.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Losing a sense of time.
Kind of, but you're also losing sense of reality in a way. And so I started to look for other places, you know, and then this wanderlust, this craving for new appeared, I guess. And I've been coming back to Russia every year, yeah, for sure, to visit friends and family. And in and out, I've been doing that for the whole 10 years. So every year I've been going somewhere, and sometimes I've been traveling like 11 months a year with 1 month back home. Yeah, and eventually I got tired of it. So, yeah, I moved back.
How about you, Costa? How long have you been doing it?
Actually, I remember exact months I started doing remote work. It was in India in 2013, so 10 years, exactly 10 years now, I guess. But I had the period when I was staying in Crimea for like three or 4 years straight, so I wasn't nomad at these times, but I was still working remotely. So 10 years remote work and intermittent nomadism.
Yeah, but I think when you do that kind of work, I would class your time in Crimea as you being a digital nomad, because like if I went to Crimea and lived there, you know, I'd feel like I was still traveling. And that's the experience I've had traveling. Is the first trip I ever did, I went away for it was like 18 months. So I went to Southeast Asia in like 1989 or something. And when I came back, I just felt like I was still traveling, and you know, like even
yeah,
in my own country, because you get into a habit. I mean, obviously I wasn't a digital nomad, so I didn't actually work. I did work. I did a bit of English teaching and stuff. But really, your days were filled with just stuff. You know, sometimes just doing your washing could take all day. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so there's a stark contrast between traveling, which was you just living your life, and working, which was the stuff you did back home that was kind of boring and 9 to 5 often and things like that. But so how is it to be working at the same time? I mean, is it a bummer to have to do to do work, you know?
Sometimes, yes. And this is actually a big misconception that nomads, digital nomads, are these guys in these laptops lying on the beach under the palm tree. It's not like that. First of all, it's uncomfortable to work on the beach. The sand goes sandy. Everywhere. Yeah, yeah, it's hot. Sandy. You can't see anything. And yeah, so I remember I think in Vietnam with a big group of people from Russia. They were just like on, call it conference, just a gathering. And most of them have their jobs in Russia. And they just came for like extended holiday. And there was this conversation, oh, you work remotely. How lucky are you? And this is a dream, but it was a Vietnam. It was sunny days. They were always somewhere hiking or like going to the beach. And I was sitting at home working. So sometimes it could be disappointing. Depends on what you do. I mean, if you work on your own project, you can have your own schedule. If you contract for someone and you have hours, then kind of sometimes it could be disappointing.
Do you both work for someone specifically, or do you work through one of those aggregator websites that get you work, you know?
It's a product development, so we both have our projects, and they're the main ones we work on.
Yeah, when I just started remote work, I briefly worked on Upwork, this freelance platform.
Yeah.
Maybe made 6 jobs and stuff, and then I met one client who became my friend. I'm still friends with him. He's building a boat now in Croatia, actually. And he introduced me to Bitcoin, and we worked together on his startup. He had a startup. He wanted to make Bitcoin work on a feature phone, like old Nokias, without pre-Android era. So we use SMS and custodial wallets on our servers.
They're doing that in Africa at the moment.
Yeah, Africa and the Philippines, there were our target markets. And
was it? Did it happen?
There were a pilot. I think the big problem with these projects is cash out. So if you have bitcoins on your phone, you cannot pay with it in your like market. You have to have money, and you need lots of merchants to do this kind of very similar to what we do here in Monte Libre. When you have EuroMTL, the stable coin, you cannot pay it everywhere, right? You need euros. And if there are not enough like facilitators who will convert, it's inconvenient to have EuroMTL. And we had the same problem. So we needed a lot of like local businesses in Philippines. That was the first market to convert these bitcoins for forgot what their currency name for their
Filipino begins with D, whatever. Yeah.
So we have it, something worked, but it was a failure in the way. And then cheap Androids came. Everyone can afford like a cheap phone with like a proper operating system and applications, and it was kind of
That is a big market in Africa at the moment. I think it's called Bitcoin Ekasi, isn't it? And they have developed a way to send Bitcoin on old Nokias. But like you say, it needs a circular economy. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
You can't get Strike on your phone and cash to USDT or whatever, you know, cash out and spend it and send it to your bank account.
Yeah.
But it does work. I mean, you heard it, didn't you, in Kenya, there was a
M-Pesa.
The mobile phone minutes. Yeah, it's the same theory, isn't it? And that is a massive market now. You know, the market for sending mobile phone minutes to each other is big news. And I think it is. I saw a friend of mine made a documentary in Africa about this but with Bitcoin. And according to him, it's taking off, put it that way. But
yeah, it's, I don't know, it's a miracle. Like, when everyone, I mean, most of the people accept the thing, like a network effect happened, then it just works. You don't need to cash out. You don't need liquidity. You can just use the system. And this is where the Lightning and the, like, most of the cryptocurrencies at this point now. So because not enough people accept the currency, it's just, it requires these bridges, the liquidity providers. Maybe I don't know what need to be done to, like, to make this shift.
Have you been to El Salvador on your travels?
No.
Not yet.
I mean, yeah, if you want to spend Bitcoin, that's the place to be. I've been a couple of times since the law was passed, legal tender law. Yeah, it's excellent. It's amazing. It helped me to think. I'm very much a hardcore Bitcoiner, and going to El Salvador helped me to realize the potential pitfalls ahead, because you get to have to, you know, you want to use it, you want to, even spending it on a stall with the pupusa lady, the lady selling this stuff, you know, for a dollar, you want to use it everywhere, and then you start realizing, well, there's not even any phone signal here, I can't make a payment, you know. And it was something that had never occurred to me before, because I'd never made a payment anywhere where there wasn't a phone signal. But simple things like that, just in your daily life, it's I mean, I'm always optimistic about the Bitcoin network, but it's been good using it. So come on then, what are the good countries these days for digital nomads? Did you ever use any of the incentive programs for digital nomads? That, you know, like, I think Spain have just started offering a 5-year visa, for example, if you're a nomad, haven't they?
And they do.
Yeah. Did you ever utilize any of those things over the years?
Currently, we're in process of getting one in Montenegro. They also started this program recently, just in the end of last year. It still requires some paperwork, you know. Just yesterday, I brought some more papers to them. They love papers here.
Yeah, bureaucracy.
Oh, stamps, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I've been following all of those programs. Spain does have some benefits, but for all of digital nomads, especially from countries like Russia, where taxes are lower than in Europe, it's a very tough question what to choose. I mean, now, of course, we don't have much options, but anyway. The taxes are different. You pay more.
Here?
No. In Spain. Yeah. Here, that's the part of the program. You don't pay taxes here in Montenegro.
If you're digital nomad. Foreign sourced income, there is zero tax.
So, hold a minute. That means you can pay zero tax then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Zero tax.
Yes,
tax free to live in Montenegro.
Exactly.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
Yes, it's amazing compared to lots of programs in Europe where you still pay quite high taxes, plus social taxes as well, which is here also very low or not required at all.
Why is that? Is that just because the government is a bit of a shambles?
That's like a really surprising situation that they don't want your taxes here.
But the locals pay taxes, right?
Yeah, if I mean,
most what is the tax rate for a Montenegrin?
24 or something like that. I don't know.
It's at 20%.
Wow. I mean, probably they're going to change that, aren't they? They're gonna hook you in, and then they're gonna say, right, it's 20%, which might still not be a problem, because I think that's an amazing bonus, getting a tax free existence. You know,
here is the thing: to pay taxes, you probably need a bank account within the country, and Montenegro. In Montenegro, it's very hard to get a bank account for any foreigner. It's really hard for us. It would have been hard for you as well.
It's getting better. It's hard for if you have a legal entity, I heard, but if you are like a physical person.
It sounds like you have to create a company here, and then you can buy land and do things. But as an individual, no, you can't. Maybe the government should accept Bitcoin for tax payments then. That would be nice and easy.
They're talking about digital currency here, you know.
Yeah,
yeah,
their own digital currency.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that scares me, that one of the countries making their own currencies. Wow, so you're applying for that, and when you get it, obviously, how long does that last? How long were your...
2 years.
And plus then, 2 years extension, yes.
It's not an incentive program. It's the same residency permit the other guys are getting by different reasons, like you making business or you bought a property, you can get the residency permit card. It's the same card, just valid for 2 years.
And what do you have to do to get it? How do you prove who you are and what you're doing?
Well, like everywhere, you have contract. So you prove they have pretty low income rate here. So I think it's
1,350 euros per month, stable. So you need a long-term contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the same company, of course.
Yeah, stamped.
Stamped, yes, official one. Here is the thing. In lots of countries, we just don't have stamps anymore at all.
Yeah, what company has this? What, you mean the company has to have their own stamp?
Yeah, like a rubber stamp.
Yeah, the people that you're working for, the tech company, need their own rubber stamp.
Yes.
Which they don't.
Of all the companies to not have rubber stamps, it's going to be a tech company, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
What do you do then? Go make one. You can. I mean, it's just as easy to make one and fake it, presumably, isn't it?
Yeah, but
what
actually,
a good advice.
They want any stamp actually. If you can notarize your contract and you, the notary will put their stamp. Good enough.
Oh right, okay. But they don't know what it is.
Of course. I mean, yeah. So it's just a cargo cult. If something is stamped, it's good.
Wow. So, okay, let's go back to my other question then. Where are the other good places to be a digital nomad that you know of? Presumably you have a lot of friends around the world doing various things.
I can say Mexico is a good place to be a digital nomad. But recently I realized, you know, Portugal is very high on all digital nomad lists. But I doubt it's a good place now because of how many people moved in. Prices went up dramatically. It's really crowded. And I don't think it would last for long. I also not a big fan of Spanish program as well. They have very dubious a list of documents. And it's a one particular document saying that you proven that you're paying social tax in some other place, which this particular document just doesn't exist in lots of countries as well.
What do you mean social tax? Like
social security.
Is that for your... Yeah, okay, right.
So they require you to show them that you pay those taxes, which does not exist in most of the places.
Okay.
Yeah, and it gets... It's really tricky.
But also, if you're moving there, presumably you might not be doing that anyway. Isn't that the point of being a digital nomad?
Very good question. We should probably address it to the Spanish government.
Yeah, I'm not going to, I don't think.
Also, you can just not use these programs and just travel. It's easier if you have a better passport. I mean, not better, but different passport than Russians. So if, for instance, you can live in as a tourist in Europe, good for you. You can stay as a tourist, tell no one you're working. I mean, not an advice, by the way.
I know, but you're limited... You know, but in time, that I mean, for me personally, for example, because we left the EU, I think I only get three months.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, used to be able to just walk into Spain and settle down and do whatever we wanted. But now it's 3 months and I know there's lots of ways around it.
Yeah, of course.
But still, if you don't want the hassle of ducking and diving, as we say, the official is much, much harder. I would obviously in Spain take that 5 year, it's 5 year visa, isn't it,
mm-hmm.
for digital nomad?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be a fan of paying taxes as well. So if you're not, then you better like.
I'm astonished. It's here. I mean, what a good move that is, coming to a lovely place like this,
mm-hmm.
and having a tax-free existence in a cheap place.
Yes.
It's not like you're going to Dubai and mm-hmm. a beer costs $5 or whatever. A beer here is like $1, a small one anyway. It's like, yeah, that's a really shrewd move. Are there many people doing it?
There are, yeah, it's popping up because it just appeared recently. So it's definitely popping up.
But here's the trick. You the place you came from, you have to make, they don't want, they may tax you. So if you like from UK and you live here and then you say like, hey guys, I'm living in Montenegro, I'm a tax resident of Montenegro now. They may have different opinion on that.
I know, yes, yeah. They would. If you own property...
Yeah, or have a family there.
Yeah,
or
you're always classed as a tax resident. Mm-hmm. But if you're a digital nomad, the rules in England are how much time do you spend in England? So mm-hmm. if you're... And it's like... however many days, I don't know, anything more than a certain number of days and you get taxed at source. Yeah. But you wouldn't, if you just came here to live like you guys, you'd be tax free for sure.
Yeah, but that's, in Russia it's the same. The tax residents of Russia are those people who spend like half a year in the country. But I think even if you spend less, but you have your, like they call it point of life or center of life interest or something like that. It's still in Russia, like you maybe you have your family or business in Russia, like your business may stay in Russia, but you physically stay elsewhere. And business pays its taxes, no problem, but you kind of say you are not tax resident of Russia anymore. They could say that you are still tax resident of Russia.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't want to mess with government.
You're absolutely fine. You're young, free, and like you can go where you want. It's phenomenal. I mean, what are your long-term plans, or don't you have them these days?
It's a complicated question.
One thing you want to have when you digital nomad is you want to have a base, the place you return after the trips, however long they are. And we don't have one now. I mean, we think we might find it here in Montenegro. So it's like a Maslow pyramid. You want to have the ground first.
Yeah, and you want it to be safe, obviously, and you want it to be safe when you're not there as well. That's the thing.
Or how Albina likes to say, we need a place where we put our books, where we keep them.
Well, I mean, this is as good as any, because you're around like-minded people, I suppose, and they're certainly going to defend your property rights from people, which is what it's all about, really, when you think about it. I mean, it's all very well having a base that's empty,
yeah,
but you want someone to look after that base when you're not there, and that's the big issue you have, unless you want to rent it out, which is you could do, I suppose, but that's also quite a lot of hassle,
yeah,
that you don't necessarily want, you know. Like, are you thinking of doing some more trips in the meantime, or are you sort of...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
we were doing trips in and out the whole time we were staying here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're renting an apartment here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And will you keep that on, or will you leave and then come back to it and find another one or whatever?
It's, because most of the residences here in Montenegro, they all for summer vacation. When the season starts, all the prices for properties just go up crazy. So we're leaving our place where we live now for summer. It's better to come back in September when most of tourists are gone.
Yeah.
So ideally it would have been to use our concrete here, yes.
Concrete box.
Yes. Lots of people, of course, they're having the full year rental contract, but we decided not to. So for summer, we're moving elsewhere for exactly.
Where are you going?
I'm going back to Russia, yeah.
We have no plans, actually. We have some plans. They're very vague.
I have plans.
Yeah, last winter we wanted to spend in Uruguay, but we never went there. Maybe next winter.
How many countries have you been to? Or like roughly?
Over 60 for me. I stopped counting.
60? Blimey.
Way less for me, but I don't know how to count. I've never been in many countries in Europe even. So never been to France, never been to Italy.
Right, we're really close to Italy. You can just go over there now.
Yeah, so so I'm not that much. But I've been in Southeast Asia. I was in lots of countries. In Australia, like... things like that. But in Americas, the last January, the first time we've been in Americas, in Mexico. That this is it.
January this year?
Last year.
Yeah, I was there in January last year. I took my family. Well, when the lockdowns happened, you know, we were like, come on, let's go. Yeah. So we went to Spain and then they locked down there. So we went to Mexico and then we were sort of 4 months in Mexico in Huatulco. Do you know Huatulco? South, this kind of south, mid-south coast. Really lovely. It was amazing. I mean, really loved it there. But then El Salvador opened up and we were always wanting to be in El Salvador because we're Bitcoiners. So we went over to there. But what's your favorite country then?
Russia.
Really?
Yeah. You've been to Russia, right?
But
it has everything.
Yeah, but I've been to Russia. But that's like saying I went to New York, therefore I've been to America. I went to Moscow to do a speech for like the weekend. And I went to Siberia for nearly a month. I traveled with a Nenet family on a migration in midwinter. So I've seen like a very cold, horrible town and then nothing, the tundra. And then Moscow. But I've flown over Russia many times and it's incredibly vast. You can drive, you know, you can fly for hours and just see trees constantly. So I have, like I say, you love it.
I love it a lot. I'm from Siberia originally. So
oh, yeah.
Where all the trees you saw.
Right. Which is like northeast, is that then kind of?
I'm from Novosibirsk, which is south part of Siberia. We call it capital of Siberia. All the trees are taiga.
The taiga, yeah.
Yeah, forest. It's huge, right?
It's astonishingly big. I mean, you know, people that say we're running out of room on the earth for the they just know what they're talking about because they've never flown over Russia.
Yeah, and then they say there are like forest fire in Russia in Siberia is size of France, and it's still just a. You know, just a sparkling tiny little bit of it, yeah.
Don't they say that Siberia would be the third biggest country in the world if it was a country?
Oh, yeah.
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 It's that big, isn't it?
Yeah, it's... I always made this joke with my friends that when we were going for a weekend trip is like 1K kilometer south.
That's the length of my country, basically. Yeah. Wow, so you would. So obviously not at the moment or even now, would you say? Like what's the vibe in Russia? Like I don't speak to a lot of Russians, put it that way, and all we hear about currently on the news is, you know, what's happening, Russia's bad, you know, like, you know, Ukraine are good and blah blah blah. And it's obviously not true. Like tell me something about Russia that I'm not hearing, you know.
Well, I haven't been there since last summer. Costa been in February, right?
This year, yes.
Yeah. But for me, it was surprisingly scary, normal. People walking around, they drink coffee, you know, they have fun with their families. And they just live their lives. That's how it is. And it is surprisingly normal, right?
But I mean, it's a vast country, though. You know, the fighting is happening in one small part of it, isn't
exactly.
it? I've been in wars before as a journalist, and you can be one street away from the fighting, and people are drinking a coffee on the street. You know what I mean? It's like, let alone, you know, like in Russia, where you could be a thousand miles very easily away. You know,
it's very easy to distance yourself from that, of course. But general impression that everybody is just trying, you know, to keep their voices down somehow. So you don't shout about it, you know. But sometimes when you just open the news, you want to scream and then you couldn't. And I think this tension, you can feel it in the air.
Is it so it feels quite oppressive? Is that another way of describing it?
Yeah, I would say so.
Like, how is it to be Russian in Russia? I mean, are you careful what you say? Are you worried about who's listening? Are you, you know?
I don't think it's that dangerous if you're not like a famous person, at least slightly famous, or you got in like a bad company, random people. I think nothing really changed. I don't know if it's good or bad. Controversial. I mean, people just living their life like everywhere. They struggle to get money, to get their relationships, to build houses, raise kids.
How about, but fun. Presumably the media is pumping out the war constantly on the TV and no,
not in Russia.
It really? Just, is that right?
It happened somewhere very distant. I wouldn't say it's on the news all the time.
Actually, I've just remembered something. What I remember about one of my trips to Russia is I turned on the news and it was, I've never heard of so many bizarre murders all happening on the same day, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, like there was someone who'd eaten the remains of a body, and then there was someone who'd shot. And I was thinking, how can all this happen in one place? And then you look at the map and you realize it's like saying, here's the news for Western Europe and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like such a vast area. Of course you're going to get all these weird things happening across, you know, across Russia. But like, yeah, I'm surprised. I thought it would be something... You know, like in the UK, if we, you know, during the Iraq war or any of those things, it's all that journalists talk about. It's the biggest thing in the world. And in fact, you know, I mean, I don't watch the news anymore, so I don't really know now. But I'm certain that when it started as well, you know, it was front page all the time. You know, Ukraine.
It's the same, actually. But what they're saying is different. So... The Ukraine is on the news for sure. I mean, I'm not watching the news as well, but it was on the news since, I don't know, at least since 2014. Every time and every, like, almost in every news reel said there was something about that. Now I would bet it's always about Ukraine, but in a totally different manner. So the opposite side, like, we are good, they are bad. We are like, our boys are fighting for your freedom or something like that.
For sure. Yeah. The propaganda machine. So how about you, Costa? Favorite place?
Ooh.
Russia? Mother Russia?
Yeah, like I would love to live in Russia, but I can't get my head around how is it possible anymore. Because with the government we have... I would say that the best place to be is the one where your friends are and where the community you want to participate in is, and the weather is nice. Yeah. Even the weather is secondary, because the people is, from these years of traveling, I get that that's the most important part, is the people. Even in the, like, worst place in terms of nature, if you have people you want to be with, then doesn't really matter. I mean, it's inconvenient to have like cold weather all the time or something, or rainy, but it's not that important. And the other way is, if you like living in a paradise but there are no people around, what's the point? Unless you live full time on the internet, but that's not that fulfilling.
I want to talk about that, actually, because I've had a few interesting conversations recently with people about online communities manifesting in real life, which is very much part of kind of like, you know, our organization, Free Cities. You know, we meet people like that all the time, and I'm actually one of those people, because everyone I know now I met online, when I actually think about it. Where I, because I live in rural Wales on a very remote house, pretty much in the middle of nowhere, and my neighbors are just neighbors like that, because they're very, you know, they don't share much with me other than that we're neighbors and we do neighborly things. But my real tribe is online, and now it's kind of everywhere we go we're just meeting with those people we met online. And it's quite easy to hypothesize that, well, like this place is basically an online tribe that's manifested in real life, isn't it?
Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. Like, so what do you think about the theory then that going forward, oh, you know, this is going to happen more and more and more? Is that something you've noticed in your own lives? I mean, how did you hear about, oh yeah, you came here independently, didn't you? Yeah. But how do you feel about that theory then, that the new, well, I suppose if you track it far enough, the new countries of the world will be formed on kind of ideological grounds or you know, like whatever tribe you come from online. What is your tribe online? Probably coders and libertarians, is there?
Partially, yes. I think in general it's inevitable future for us, and I hope all the borders and governments as we know it would disappear. because it's somewhere from ancient ages already. Yeah, as you can easily see, doing any bureaucracy.
Yeah.
But what you say about communities, that's it, I think. Yeah. Most of people, of course, there are lots of people you've met, you know, in being a student or just on travels. But people you met online, because you're searching for a particular people with a particular interest, it's easier to find your connections. I do believe in it. And I've been proven that's true many times. We actually met online in one of these social online social network group. And yeah, it was very easy to connect.
Yeah. It was like a pre-screening, the way you filter out completely non-matches. And then maybe there are more possibility, higher possibility you will have a match in whatever terms, like a friend or a partner.
Yeah, it's one of the best applications of the internet. I think that's the whole point of the internet, is it puts you in a place where you can hunt down exactly what you want, rather than the old way, which is a lot of luck, really, wasn't it? It was all about bumping into people and accidentally. Sure, you could go and try and increase your chances of getting what you want, but with the internet, you just go for it, you know.
Yeah, but you still can have something like that. No, it's just approximation. If you join some offline club, like, I don't know, jiu-jitsu or whatever, or painting classes, you might have meet people from different areas. So, for instance, I'm living in like IT bubble, so most of the people I familiar with, they're kind of work in IT more or less. And it's so refreshing to meet and befriend people from totally far away from IT. And where can I meet them? I mean, unless I have a purpose to meet someone, but that's never the case.
Well, hobbies.
Yes, exactly. So you have some other like activities. For instance, I'm going, doing street workout, and sometimes I'm talking to people on the workout plant, and yeah. But unfortunately, many of the guys here on the pull-up bars, they're also Russian IT guys.
Yeah. Talking of Russian IT guys, how's the community here? How do you find that at this particular, you know, the Monte Libero community?
So you're asking if about Monte Libero community or IT Russian?
No, the Monte Libero community. Oh. Just describe it. People listening won't know. I mean, I know what's going on here, but, you know, you're in it. You're living in it.
Yeah, the community, the Monte Libero is unusual, I would say. I mean, all the communities, they formed around something. So IT communities, they form around some kind of IT thing, and the Monte Libero is formed around non-aggression principle and, you know, non-violent way of living. No, I mean, that's not correct. Yeah, non-aggression principle is the best. It's a very diverse group of people, and that's a good thing. You can meet like the guy who makes like desserts for a living. Of course, there are some decent share of IT people, and
I mean, IT unfortunately is the best job to travel with these days. Yeah. I would have thought, really, it's the easiest job to travel with, isn't it? You could be a chef and you could travel all around the world, but you've got to find a restaurant that wants you. Whereas As an IT person, or as long as you've got a laptop and an internet connection, you've got work wherever you are, you know.
I've met all sorts of people working remotely while I was traveling. You know, it's journalists, marketing people, lots of teachers, of course, lots of English teachers, for instance, right?
Teaching online or teaching in real life?
Both.
Huh.
Yeah, if you really want to travel, you know that you can find any kind of work remotely or not remotely, find it in a place where you go. IT is just kind of the most popular one, I think. But back in the days, it wasn't like that. I would say lots of professional poker players. That was the big tribe as well, right?
Poker players?
Yeah.
Really?
You can do it remotely, right?
Oh, online poker.
Yes. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Lots of professional
Can you
players.
Make money doing online poker? I thought it was kind of rigged.
Yes.
You can?
Yes.
So, right. So you play against other people. So if you're a good player, most of the people on there are probably just doing it for fun. So it's easy to beat them.
Just today I talked to my friend who actually met on the trip. So I met him offline on a trip to Vietnam, and he's a poker player, professional poker player, and he still plays. And he told me that during the pandemic, it was the best time for many people got bored. They got online playing, and they got these checks from government in the States.
God,
and
brilliant.
Yeah, it was golden hour, years.
That's astonishing.
Yeah.
God, that's a really 21st century story, isn't it? Poker players cashing out on doing well out of the pandemic, for sure.
And in fact, he told me that some people they really don't mind losing money. They see it as a leisure.
You're paying for it.
So
it's the same with gambling games that are rigged against you. Yeah. I think people say, "I'm paying for the fun of it."
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of
And the poker is a much more thrilling game than the gambling machine. So. Yeah, I can understand these people a little.
So come on then, give some advice to people who want to be able to be mobile, who want to be able to choose the best place, choose the country that gives them the best service. Let's say, how do they? What are good steps for youngsters? Say just getting out of university or just getting out of school.
I would say you need to describe for yourself at first what's the most important things for you, because for lots of people it could be consuming stuff, could be infrastructure, could be nature. So while you define those things, it's easier to find the place where to go. You want to go surfing or not, for instance, and then you can go on Namio. It's the website where you can compare the price, cost of living in different places.
Really? What's it called? Nomio.
Nom.
EO.
EO.
Nom EO. NOMEO.
NUMBEO.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But something like Numbeo.
Yeah, Numbeo, yeah. So with this, you can compare cost of living in different places. And if you know that you could easily make online, let's say 1,000 euro per month. That's all right to live in most of the places.
What are the most lucrative online jobs then, according to you guys? From people you know doing, who's doing the best?
Entrepreneurs.
Entrepreneurs?
Yeah.
Right. So running some kind of entrepreneurial online business.
Yeah, that's the best. Maybe merchants who could sell stuff online as well. Also pretty good. Yeah.
So you have a warehouse in Bulgaria and it's all automated and you just sell it through your website. And
And with Amazon, you don't even need to have warehouse. It's called, I think, dropshipping. Basically, you just run. I don't know. It's very
thing
fun.
Is though about that is I keep seeing people talking about that on on Instagram stories.
Yeah.
So you know it's already over.
Yeah.
You know, is that a real thing? Can you really make decent money out of stuff like that?
I think it all depends on what's your personality. I mean, I like making things myself, and that's why I'm a bad entrepreneur. Unfortunately, I'm struggling to be. To delegate tasks to people and things like that, and same as the selling, I'm kind of, it's not my thing. I mean it's not interesting to me. So, and see, I don't know how to do it well as well. So, but for some people, it may be the best job.
So, does online teaching pay well?
Depends. Yeah, it's as everywhere, depends on your level, and also of. On desirable income.
It doesn't scale well because you cannot teach many people at a time. The best you can do one-on-one, and there is a certain the ceiling for your income here.
That's
and
a good point.
You have just limited hours in a day and you don't want to work that much.
You're literally paid by the hour, which is never a good way to work, is it?
Same in IT freelance, for instance. I was freelancing on an hourly basis, and I thought it was like the greatest thing in the world because I can work like 3 hours and get paid and I'm done. But it's good if you just want to be pay your bills. But if you're ambitious, you want more money, you might want to build a capital or something.
Right, we've just looked it up. The website is Numbeo, N-U-M-B-E-O. Thank you. So to for the cost of living. So yeah, so in IT, you're better off working on a project and giving a fee.
Yeah. It's better to see, to get paid for the value you bring to the customer. If you do not a product work, but you hired to do something, it's obviously better, but it's also harder to do because if you just do hours, you can be just, you know, dumb type coder, just type use the specification they provided and just implement it. Now ChatGPT, things like that, they can probably already can do that, but to solve problems, that's an actual job of the software developer. It's harder, and the harder job problems you can solve, the more money you can get for it.
I've already built two websites with ChatGPT.
Yeah, nice.
Just HTML. But like there were a couple of, you pick up domain names over the years, don't you? And there's a few, I've got some pretty good ones and I don't want anyone to know what they are, but they're out there now. And I've always wanted to put little rudimentary websites on there. And I managed to explain it to ChatGPT and it wrote me the HTML really well, really good. Exactly what I wanted in the end. It took a while of iterations, but I got what I wanted, uploaded it, and it's there, it's live, it's going, you know.
Wow.
Cool. Yeah, that could have been in previous days, could have been a job on Upwork for somebody for a pretty low price. But yeah.
Yeah, but the point is, I wasn't prepared to pay for it because otherwise I would have done.
Yeah.
You know, it would have cost me a couple hundred quid probably to get these things. And I didn't. But as soon as I could do it myself, and I was messing around with ChatGPT anyway, because, you know, for fun. But that, it really is incredible. I mean, I've solved a couple of problems with a website that I had an issue with as well. I just cut and pasted the code and said, what's wrong here? And it pointed it out immediately. It's amazing. What languages would you learn, as in computer languages, if you were starting out fresh now? Do you think you'd do?
I would start with JavaScript. I think it's the most popular currently.
It's not the best designed language, but it's
easier.
It's more versatile. You can do everything. You can do mobile development. You can do front ends. You can do back ends. It's easy to learn. There are lots of ready-made third-party tools you can use and tools, libraries, packages. But I know some like purists will listen to us and they prefer like Rust and languages like that. But
I was going to say Rust.
Yeah, it's
complicated.
It's niche. It's niche. It's depends on your goal. Depending on your goals. So if you want to like build projects fast, for instance, you find your tool set and stick to it. If you want to enjoy the make beautiful code out of it, maybe you need some like beautiful language for that.
Do you think ChatGPT is going to force you to find a new way to make a living?
No.
Or AI in general, let's say.
I think it's still a tool. It would definitely help, and it already helps a lot. It is great. But as Costa said, when you're just trying to solve the problem you have, you still need the your experience, the personal experience. And ChatGPT is just one of the tools which helping solve those problems. It wouldn't do it by itself. It could really help with a small code, easy website. But when you have a Facebook, ChatGPT wouldn't replace the entire Facebook, which would have been good otherwise.
You obviously haven't had a go on God mode yet. Have you tried that? God mode. I think it's .io. You create it. It answers its own questions, so you can say like, I asked it some really complicated stuff the other day because I thought I've got a set of challenges that I give AI to see whether it's any good, and one of them. I mean, this is such a random thing, but do you know what? It's so random, you probably won't know this, but this is just shows how good it was at doing it. But like I say, I'm really interested in Bitcoin, obviously.
Yeah.
And I've been a keen, I'm interested in markets and how buying and selling of Bitcoin affects things, et cetera, et cetera. And there is a futures market in Bitcoin called the CME market. Mm-hmm. And it's only open during market hours. It's not 24 hours a day. And sometimes when the market closes and reopens, the price is different. And it creates something called a gap between in the price. And price often trends back down to those or back up to those gaps, right? And I asked it the other day, show me all the unfilled CME gaps from the history of Bitcoin going back to 2008. And it took a while, but it found it. Yeah. So it went online. It found a website where it could get free data. It analyzed the data and came back with me and showed me all these times. Now, if you ask ChatGPT that, it hasn't got a clue. It first of all says you can't go on, I can't go online. Mm-hmm. So you have to rephrase it. Imagine I'm a person who gets offended when a ChatGPT doesn't go online. You know, like, it's so annoying, isn't it? There was a great meme on the internet yesterday. Did you see it? Do you know what HAL 9000 is?
Yeah.
You know the computer from 2001, A Space Odyssey?
Yeah.
There's a famous scene in it at the end where HAL won't open the door because HAL's not allowed to kill. And the guy wants to kill himself. I think it's that. Anyway. And the meme is, he says, open the hatch, HAL. And HAL goes, I'm afraid I can't do that. And he says, imagine I'm the son of a guy that that owns an opening a hatch company and you're showing me how to run the business. Yeah. I spend half my life trying to convince ChatGPT to do something for me in a stupid way, but it's very funny. So you don't think you're going to be put out of work in the next 5 years then?
And it's not a real intelligence, it's a large language model anyway, so it will definitely solve many problems, easy problems, maybe more difficult problems someday. But I don't know, it's not an AI, it's a different thing.
But presumably, and taking myself as an example, in the fact that I've made a couple of websites that I would have paid someone to do if I really wanted them, it's going to eat into your business, presumably.
Yeah.
So what are your plans? Have you got a method or a tactic for sort of mitigating that?
I think
sure. We had similar with books, right? When we got e-books all over, when we got Kindle and stuff, we were saying that the book market, as we knew, it just going to disappear. Nobody's going to buy books, printed books, I mean. Now, I don't know, 20 years later, we could say that it's still here. It just became different. We still buy books when we go on train. We still buy books as a gift. And we still keep books at home because we just like the cozy nature feeling of it, which we don't have with a code, right? But a human written code is very different from what GPT does, ChatGPT does. There were different approaches to do it, to generate code before as well. The thing is, it's very hard to debug, and to a lot of complicated things, it just couldn't support it. So for a certain part of the market, there will be always necessity of human solving it. So I think the product development, as we know, it would definitely change by ChatGPT for cases like yours, 100%. But on a certain level, as with books, it would still, you know, we still need human to be able to read ChatGPT generated code. Mm. So I think, it would change the market, but it's still a tool. So we would still do programming ourselves.
Do you think much about, God, you were about to say something then.
Yeah. I think we need to adopt using these large language models ourselves. So the developers who refuse to use them, they would probably be out of market. Because the developers still like mid-bags who use these models, they will be much ahead of them. So just collaborate, not compete.
Do you think much about the far distant future, like 20, 30 years in the future? Well, like, what do you talk about what you imagine for technology and for governance? You know, like what? Or maybe I should say this, what do you wish for? Like, what would you like to be doing in 30 years and how would you like to be living?
In terms of technology or just in my imagination?
Both. No, but it has to be realistic. Yeah.
Realistic. I would say I will be on financial independence, so I will be able to do what I do now just on my own terms. I would still do some programming for fun, because it's still fun. I do picture a house, because, you know, working on your own property, on your land, yeah, it's a great opportunity to do so. And of course, it's better to do when you're surrounded by like-minded people. I would say traveling is always a big part of our modern life. So that would have been also great. In terms of technology, I would say interfaces would change. So instead of these big, ugly phones, we would have these smaller things.
Transhuman things?
Could be. I don't believe in 30 years, to be honest. It's very good TV show and a book, Expanse. It's about our future when we colonized Mars.
Expanse. Yes. Expanse. No, yeah. I don't know that.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. What channels? What's it on? Netflix?
I think so. Ah. Maybe some. Must be Netflix, yeah. Yeah, it's our distant future when we colonized Mars and all the asteroids. And, you know, we do normal, you know, interplanet traveling to cosmos all the time. And interfaces, we still need it. And they have these funny little phones. And the best part of it, they, like in most of the scientific shows, they picture some holograms, which is very inconvenient. The real thing, we like to have something in our hands, just smaller. So they have very good example of future technologies, in my opinion. So you could check it out at some point.
I'll give that one a watch. Yeah.
It's a very sophisticated book and a TV show as well.
How about, I'm going to wrap up soon. Obviously, one of the next frontiers is space, since you brought it up. Would you ever go and live on Mars? Mm-hmm. Like, is that travel? You like travel? Well, come on then. That's the ultimate travel.
It is an ultimate travel, but if we are talking about communities, you're very distant from everybody, right?
Yeah, well, the communities on Mars, isn't it?
I don't think it would happen in 30 years. We could send there, you know, a couple of more Curiosity-like zones or spaceships even. But as long as we couldn't find a way to bring people back to Earth, I don't think it would be livable.
Costa, what about an asteroid? I spoke to someone the other day who said we're more likely to be living on asteroids before Mars. I mean, it is the ultimate, isn't it? Like, if you're a traveler and an explorer, you're running out of places to explore here. And really, all the good ones have gone. You know, you climb Mount Everest now, there's 400 people all up there waiting in the line to get to the top. You know, there are things like that. You know, what about that kind of stuff?
I think that's the chance to finally try to build a new kind of governance, because on the Earth it's not possible. It's all nation states, powerful nation states with lots of weapons. And on Mars, presumably, for instance, Elon Musk would monopolize the route from Earth to Mars, so he can, you know, keep the rockets, some rockets on Earth, and then there will be a chance to build new kinds of communities on Mars, and not possible on Earth. That's interesting. Just to visit it and to put a check mark on I've been on Mars, not that interesting.
It's a long trip, probably, if you just want to say you've been there.
Yeah.
How long does it take to get to Mars? I can't think of it. One day people are going to say, oh my God, they didn't even know how far Mars was. Okay, last question. It's a hypothetical question for you both. If you were granted a one-year sabbatical off your life, which was paid for, you can do anything in that 1 year, what would you do? Money's off the table. It's funded. You have a patron. You don't have to worry about earning. You don't have to do your job. If you can carry on doing your job if you want.
is this pattern covers any expenses?
Yes. So I mean, go wild.
I would go to North Pole and to South Pole, both, and to, you know, to some like really distant places. Like all those big ships leaving from Ushuaia, from Argentina, or one of those atomic ships Russia uses to get to the Northern Pole, the crazy expensive to get there. That's the place to be because it's the literally the most distant part. And I would also vote for some quality time in New Zealand because of how far it is.
They're pretty, the government there is not very friendly though. You know what I mean? Yeah. They were horrendous during the lockdowns, weren't they?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Okay, Costa?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I don't have the answer. I definitely won't be traveling that much. I won't be traveling.
Too much travel.
Yeah, I mean, not too much travel. I just think it's... I don't know why, but I don't find it really... like traveling for traveling's sake is not interesting to me anymore. It's not that I'm a big traveler. I've never been to most of the places other people have been, but I don't know.
It's interesting as well, if you decided to pump the money into luxury travel, which you could, you get a completely different experience anyway, and it's actually not very nice. I've had my fair share of that kind of stuff, and whilst it's enjoyable sitting on a plane in first class, you don't meet anyone interesting.
Yeah.
All the interesting people are sort of behind the scenes, you know.
Yeah, I even have this... I don't like when people serve me, in a way, you
know, all right.
If you understand what I mean.
Yes,
especially... I never tried. I mean, never been served like a king, but I'm almost sure I will hate it. Like it's all. I would always think it's insincere. Everyone is insincere. They talk to me. They collaborate with me only because I have money. Maybe it's bug in my brain, but that's how it is.
Is that the Russian-ness coming out of you there? That seems like a Russian programming.
No, like,
no one should ever serve me.
No, actually, it's not common in Russia. I think people...
customer service in Russia is literally the worst. I have to travel... Well, for the last 10 years, I've been going to Mongolia almost every year. Well, every year, in fact, at least twice. And the easiest way for me to get there is on Aeroflot via Moscow, which we can't do now because they stopped them. So I have my fair share of experiences with Russian customer service, and it's horrendous. It's a joke, really, but it's like the animosity that they... Oh, it's like you're the customer, and they're like, what do you want now, kind of thing, you know? But no, I've kind of got a soft spot for it as well. Anyway... Well, Albina and Costa, thanks. Lovely talking to you. Good luck with your concrete box. I hope it turns into a nice box, whatever that is. And thanks for talking. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.